Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. My name is Kurt Wilson. I'm the Armchair Survivalist, and today is August the 18th in the year 2019. Before we get into the show, as usual, I want to give you a little information, what's happening at the business, we have any sales going on, that kind of stuff. Listen, you go to se1.us or survivalenterprises.com, se1, Samuel Edwards, the number one, .us. And you can poke around the site there and see the stuff that we sell. Or you go on the left-hand side, and you scroll down a little bit, and you'll see sale, on sale, closeouts, whatever it's listed as. Click on that, and it'll take you, and it'll show you the different things that we're getting rid of that we're, well, closing out would be the appropriate term. We have solar panels. We're closing out our Aquacera and Dalton water purification systems, heirloom seeds. There's a bunch of different stuff there. Just poke around. You know, we'll talk later about this stuff. But anyway, let's get into the show. So I have different categories: economy, health, food, Islam, liberal psychosis, Trump, government threat, and then whatever the show is going to be on. Now I don't have anything for Trump today because he's doing what he does, which is pretty much piss off the liberals. Anybody else out there think that Trump's tweets are like the little laser pointer and the Democrats are the cats? You know, you ever done that? You just take a little laser pointer and of course, the cats, they're not really smart, so they'll follow this little dot anywhere. And that's basically what they do. And you ever notice also that liberals have no sense of humor at all? The sense of humor liberals have is the kind, what you would call slapstick comedy. Somebody falls and hurts himself. They laugh like crazy about that. Anyway, so let's get into the economy. So we had a problem this week. The Dow dropped over 800 points. I watched it live when it was almost 900 and something points down, and then it kind of corrected itself a little bit. What's happening is that the Dow Jones, which is the top 30 industrial corporations, they're no longer, it doesn't matter how good the economy is in the United States, because the Dow Jones is no longer solid with the economy in the United States. It reflects what's happening worldwide, because most of these corporations have gotten the hell out of the United States because of taxes and government interference and that kind of stuff. So this drop is reflecting the economy worldwide. And of course, whenever somebody does something, like Trump does something, or the Federal Reserve does something, or the psychotics in Congress do something, or, you know, something happens, it's reflected worldwide. And if it was only reflected in the United States, our stock market would be a lot stabler, because Americans are a lot more stable emotionally. The world, unfortunately, has been pretty much taken over by pseudo-intellectuals and communists. Different levels of communism. Socialism is a level of communism. Socialism is what most of the world is now. And they overreact, knee-jerk reactions to all kinds of things. Especially, I don't know, if a big corporation files a quarterly report that says, "Oh, our income, we estimated that we would make probably $27 million this year, and we're only making 21, so we're down $6 million from our projected income." That's not how real life works. But regardless, people start freaking out. So, stock market this week has been like a giant yo-yo. Down, 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 up, down. And it's going to continue doing that, because the truth of the matter is the economy worldwide is being destroyed. And there's many reasons behind that. It all usually stems back to socialistic viewpoints and attitudes that are in control of certain nations that's causing this to happen. So we'll see what breaks loose on the 19th, on Monday. The U.S. mortgage debt Do you remember when they had the 2008 recession and it was really bad because the mortgage debt was so high and people weren't being able to pay their mortgage? Well, about 2 years ago, I noticed the exact same thing starting to happen, where the government was stepping in and allowing minorities to purchase houses with almost zero money down, or given special breaks by the government, or just so many different things. And then I see this ad on TV saying, hey, you want a house? We're building new ones here. No money down. Just come in. We'll finance anyone. Right now, the U.S. mortgage debt has hit a record high. It's eclipsing the 2008 peak. It's way above what it was in the last crash. See, these are warning signs. And unfortunately, not a lot of people are paying attention to this stuff. Did you know that Chase Bank closed down all of its branches in Canada? And it erased all credit card debt for Canadian customers? Think about that for a second. Chase Bank left Canada. And they said, you know what? We're not even going to ask any of you guys who owe money on your Chase credit cards to pay it if you're Canadian. So they just forgave all of the debts to their Canadian customers. It makes you think that maybe this debt is not real anyway, and they just use it as a control mechanism. Otherwise, why would they just say, never mind, you just spent $20,000 on a vacation to Libya? Doesn't matter. Keep the money. Don't pay us. Yeah. Now, there's something happening also. And now this, most people would not even pay attention to it in any way, shape, or form. And mainstream business wouldn't pay attention to it. You got a computer, you ever replace the RAM in it? This is the read memory. This is the little stick, that little flat thing. It's about an inch wide and maybe 3 inches long. And it slips into a slot in your computer. And it gives you more memory. Okay, this is what's called dynamic random access memory, or DRAM. Or RAM for you old people. We had a friend when we lived in Modesto. He was a Chinese guy that ran a computer company. He bought a safe from us. And I said, well, what do you need a safe for? He goes, I keep my RAM in there. You do what? I didn't know what he was talking about. Yeah, that stuff is gold. It is literally, you could have $1 million in a box, in a lunchbox. That's how valuable this stuff is. The value is collapsing. The prices on the DRAM is dropping so fast, it's ridiculous. And this is, most of it's made in China, and they manipulate their dollar, their money. So they've manipulated it enough to where RAM right now is cheaper than it's ever been in history. So you, if you need extra memory for your computer, now's the time to buy it. But remember this. This is an indication of the global economy. This is a big indication of the global economy. And speaking of the economy, you know what? I've talked about this for years. Cashierless stores. No cashier in a store. I went and visited my father, last century sometime. And my stepmother worked at Safeways in Hawaii. And they had a test where they had the customers, you know, the scanner, the food scanner that's on the it's flat, right? And it has these lasers, and you run your product across it, and it reads the code, and it, you know, figures it out how much it is and how many you got. Well, they had an experiment where the customer simply did all this. Customer comes up to the checkout stand and sweeps everything across there. And then a screen is there, and it pops up how much you owe. You insert your credit card, you slide your credit card, punch your numbers in, whatever you do. and then you bag your own food and you leave. So you didn't need a cashier. Well, the cashier's union went crazy, and they threatened to close down all the stores in Hawaii. So they stopped that. They changed that idea. Now, you go into Walmart, and there's, on both sides of the store, are self-checkouts, which do exactly that. And they might have one person there to help you in case something goes wrong. There are stores now popping up all over the world that have only a security guard there or only a manager, and that's it. Nobody else is there. You walk in, all the products have a radio frequency identification device on them, an RFID chip. So you walk in, you at the door or at home, you register a credit card. Okay, you register this card. This is the card that you're going to be using at all of these stores. You walk in, you figure out what you want, and you put it in your basket, and you go up to the counter when you're done, and you, as you're pushing this cart around, the cart has sensors on it, so it tells what you put in and what you take out. So you go up to the counter, the counter reads what you have in your cart. A screen comes up and says, this is your charge, and you hit yes or no. And then you bag it and you walk out. That's it. You don't have to hold a card out. You don't have to do anything. They don't need anybody there. And what's funny about this is that I recall in Hollywood years ago, there was a cafeteria on a corner of two of the streets there that you could seat maybe 100 people in there. And there was only one employee, and all they did was clean the tables. Whatever you wanted, there was a whole wall full of little doors. And you would go up and put whatever change you wanted in. Whatever you wanted, there was a slot there. You put the money in, open the door, and pull your food out. You didn't need a service. You didn't need anything else. It's almost as if we're going back to what we had in the 40s and 50s. Where we didn't need cashiers. Well, that'd be interesting. I don't know. The only problem is, it's a human that has to program the value for whatever number, RFID chip, you know, like Safeway did this thing years ago. Toilet paper, and we'll just give a hypothetical number, was $1 for 4 rolls. Well, some human programmed $1.01. People don't look at that. They don't see that. The cashier just sweeps it, just scans it, boom, and away you go. Well, the Bureau of Weights and Measures comes in once a year and does a double check on everything in every store. So they checked Safeway, and Safeway got a fine. And the fine was for the amount of money over that they had collected. It was $3.4 million. That's a lot of pennies, and that's Safeway worldwide, or, you know, it's they did this everywhere. So when you go to a store, I don't care if it's all automatic. There's a human that programs this stuff, and humans make mistakes. So always watch when they're scanning your food and your products, because humans make mistakes. All right, now we're getting into health and food. Now, there was an article that came out in The Guardian about it's raining plastic. Well, now, this is kind of strange because we're up in North Idaho, and I personally know 3 different vets who have this weird phenomenon that's occurring in their body where really thin plastic fibers are coming out of their body in like pimples and boils and stuff. And it's they call it Morgellons disease. And here's this thing that's happening in the Rocky Mountains where these microscopic fibers, plastic fibers, are falling from the sky. They rain and they come down. So there's something going on here. And I think there are some, this could be a coincidence, but I don't think so. But there are people out there who have these minor things coming, these plastic fibers coming out of their skin. Now, I don't think this is a new thing. I think this has been around a long time. When I was in Vietnam, I had this thing happening with my elbows where white, I thought they were hairs at first, but I could grab a hold of them and pull them out without any pain. And I had this in my both elbows. Now, I didn't look like a Yeti walking around with hairy elbows, but it was kind of weird. It went away after a while. But it's these plastic particles are actually being found in the air, falling to the ground now. And just so you guys know, if you go to armchairsurvivalist.com, well, you can listen in the chat room there to the show on Sunday. There's also a link there. So it's like if you missed the show, you click this link and you can listen to the most recent show. I also, on the left-hand side of the page, have the little nipper dog listening to the RCA Victor gramophone. You click on that and it'll take you to my archive page where you can listen to the current shows for the year. I only keep 1 year at a time. Well, also, I have on the left-hand side of that page, you'll see links to show notes. Everything I talk about, I back up with facts. I don't just pull things out of an orifice and start talking. I have a source. So I have my show notes up. And you go and look. Let's say you wanted to see some of the stuff I talked about last week. You go to show notes, click on that date, and it'll take you to a page that shows sources, links to everything I talked about. Same thing will be up in a few days from this show, specifically the plastic microscopic fibers that seem to be falling from the skies in Rocky Mountains. Okay, so I also wanted to talk about acetaminophen. This is a painkiller, right? An NSAID, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. And you can buy it over the counter, and it reduces inflammation, it reduces temperature, and fever. Unfortunately, it is almost to the point of deadly, especially in children. There's over 600 items, you know, like cough syrup or rub-on stuff even, that have acetaminophen in them. And the problem with acetaminophen is it's great if you use it just once or twice, but we have people, and I'm in my store in Hayden, I have somebody come in every single week who says, yeah, I've been taking so much Tylenol. I have to take it all the time to kill my pain. Now, don't you go to a doctor? Yeah, the doctor prescribed it for me. He said, here, take this Tylenol. Take it every day. Or take this drug that has acetaminophen in it. And I said, you're gonna destroy your liver. It's not an if. And it's bad because about 25% of Americans are taking acetaminophen medication one way or another every week. It gets right into the liver and it destroys it. There are many other things that you can take to kill pain, to reduce fever, and not worry about this kind of stuff. I'll have a link to it. It talks about there are products you can take while you're taking acetaminophen that counteract its problems, its destruction of the kidneys. But, you know, with so much stuff out there, why would you take it? There's so many different things out there. Even if you break down and just get aspirin. Speaking of aspirin, you know how doctors all the time are saying, oh, take this X amount of aspirin daily and it'll help your heart. Centers for Disease Control came out and said, bogus, that doesn't do anything. As a matter of fact, it causes more harm than good because, and I knew this as a child, my grandmother told me, and I just said, yeah, okay, fine. Well, now I find out it's true. Every time you take 300 milligrams of aspirin, especially if it's on an empty stomach, it causes your stomach to bleed and lose about a teaspoon of blood. It's not a big deal unless you're taking it every day for a year. So you don't. The Centers for Disease Control came out and said, "Stop taking aspirin for your heart. It's It is now contraindicated. And of course, doctors don't care. Because what is the purpose of a doctor? To prolong your problem. Doctors are not there to cure anything. They're there to prolong it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I'm going to have a big sign made, and I'm going to hang it here in the store. Doctors are not there to cure anything. They're there to prolong it. Oh, this vaping thing. This big thing now. Everywhere you go, you see people, oh, I'm so proud of myself, I quit smoking. Now I'm just sucking in electronically created smoke. I don't know if you've seen this. You've probably seen somebody doing the vaping, right? And they have a little pen, and that's it, okay? No. What the millennials are doing and what kids are doing is seeing how much smoke they can create at one puff. I'm driving on a freaking freeway. I'm doing 70 miles an hour. And the car in front of me, a giant cloud of white smoke comes out of the window, like something just exploded inside the car. So I slowed down. I don't know what's going on. He didn't change lanes or, you know, speed up, slow down or anything or weave. And a few seconds later, another giant cloud of white smoke comes out. And I got up alongside of him. And this guy has got this thing the size of a baseball in his hand with a nipple on it. And he's sucking on it. And it's a vape unit. Vape, short for vaporizing. See, the problem isn't in the fact that they do this, that people are vaping, okay? The problem is that now they think that because they're not sucking on a cigarette, it's totally okay to suck in as much smoke as you can. And they do this. They will suck in so much and blow it out that it will fill up a normal bathroom with smoke. And you couldn't even see. And they're under the misimpression that, or the impression that it's safe to do that. It's not. What people don't understand is that there are two carcinogenic items in vape liquid. One is PG and the other is PEG. These are the liquids that allow whatever else is in there to burn. Well, it's the same ingredient that's in antifreeze. And would you want to suck in hot antifreeze? That's basically what's in a vaping liquid. I mean, they got all kinds of different stuff. You want eucalyptus liquid. You want taste like a cigar liquid with actual with actual chemicals in it that will emulate a cigarette. In fact, you can even get THC. That you can smoke in these things, something from marijuana. It's one of the ingredients in marijuana. The reason I'm mentioning this is that dozens, and there's more than that, and they just haven't been reported. Teenagers are going into hospitals with severe lung injuries and breathing problems. Because you suck all this stuff in, what do you think makes the smoke? Heat. You have a little coil inside that pen that heats up and goes and burns it. So what's happening is these people are actually burning their larynx, their throat, their lungs. And they're going into hospital and the doctors haven't had a clue what's going on. Well, they're starting to learn this now. We've had that here. Now, it was not being reported to the CDC because they thought it was just simple individual problems that occurred now and then, nothing large enough for the government to actually look at. Well, it's happening all over the United States. Instead of just using these things like they normally should, they suck in so much smoke they burn themselves. Not counting, you know, that's just one part of the story. The rest of the part of the story is there's no long-term studies on the neurological, respiratory, musculature, any research on long-term use. And by the time they get to the research on long-term use, it's going to be too late for too many of these people. But this is what this is what humans do. They lack the thing called common sense, and they go way overboard on anything almost. I mean, this vaping thing. Now, don't get me wrong, it's better than a carcinogenic cigarette, but not by much. Okay, let's get into Islam. Now, this is going to be interesting. So, we have these two Muslims that got elected by some really stupid people to the Congress of the United States, of course. And these two Muslims, they hate Jews, they hate Israel, they hate America, for that matter. They hate white people, they hate conservatives, they hate everyone who's not them. So a bunch of the Democrats have been taking trips to Israel. This is where they go over there and they get schmoozed by the Jews. And they work out monetary things and they just do stuff, right? So these two Muslims wanted to go. And when asked by the news, Trump was asked by the media, well, what do you think of them going there? And Trump said, if I was Netanyahu, I wouldn't let them in. They hate Israel. They hate Jews. They're anti-Semitic. It's proven because these two are recorded numerous times spewing insults to Israel and the Jews. And one of them is even part of a boycott of Israel. So Trump said, I wouldn't let him in. He didn't say, don't let him in. He said, I wouldn't let him in. Well, Netanyahu took a look at it and said, you know, you're right. I'm not going to let him in either. And then Trump got a hold of Netanyahu. He said, look, but one of these women, her grandmother lives in Palestine. Why don't you let her, for humanitarian reasons, let her come in? Now, of course, the media didn't catch that part. All they got was Netanyahu said, yeah, she can come in. So this hate-filled Muslim comes out and says, no, I'd never go. That would be compromising my realities and my beliefs. Because he did say, while you're here, though, you can't condemn Israel. She said, I won't do that. I will condemn Israel at all points. So the two Muslims aren't going to be allowed in Israel. I wonder why. I mean, yeah, okay. Could it be... See, one of these Muslims is a Somali, okay? And she was elected, obviously, by the majority in her area of Somalis. This is how it happens. This is how the United States is taken over. The enemies move in, and they just simply outvote you. We are being destroyed by our own rules. So there's, speaking of Somali, now we're going to go into, where are we at? Now we're going into Islam. Yeah, we're in Islam. There we are. So a Somali in Arizona, not one in Minnesota, him and his friend got arrested because they've been training to fight with ISIS. And they both wanted to be the beheading guy. They wanted to go to Egypt, get in with ISIS, and behead, chop the heads off as many Americans as they can. This is one of those Muslims that were brought into this country and lives on our taxes. And this is what he wants to do. Now, you know, there was another mass shooting. Not like you think. It was the police went to serve a warrant on a guy who opened fire, and he ended up wounding six cops. Turns out the guy has a background of criminality you wouldn't believe. And we'll put it this way. He was let off from almost every crime he committed because of two reasons. One, he's black. The other, he's Muslim. Media is not going to say that, ever. But this guy that shot six cops and then surrendered was Muslim. And that's why he keeps getting let off. Well, they don't. Yeah. The judge just doesn't want to be discriminatory. Or the judge doesn't want to be called Islamophobic. Don't you love it when the socialists create a word to insult somebody who doesn't like the smell of dog crap? Now, that's just an example. So that would be caninophobia. See, what is phobia? Phobia is a non-reality fear. Like somebody's afraid of sharp knives, but they've never been cut in their life. Nor have they ever seen anybody cut. So a phobia is an unreasoning fear of something. So when you don't like something because it's evil or deadly or smelly or disgusting, the liberals will come out and call you phobic, Islamophobic, homophobic. So anyway, so that could be why the judge did that. Keeps letting him go. Oh, and while he was busy shooting up the cops, CNN was out doing the coverage on this standoff. And this was Philadelphia, of course. At least it wasn't Baltimore. And they were saying, oh, we need more gun control. See, if we had more gun control, this wouldn't have happened. This would not have happened. We all know that's El Toro Caca. Speaking of liberal psychosis, let's get into that. Yeah, let's see here. Okay. Oh, this is ridiculous. This is, and I don't understand why any of you can even contemplate living in California. The school system in California teaches sexual perversion. They teach it. If you can imagine the worst circumstances and form of instruction, they're teaching it in California. Now, sanity rules that the parent of one of the children that's going to be taught this perversion could stand up and say no. No, California has decided parents are not allowed to opt out. Your children have to be propagandized and desensitized into sexual perversions. All different ones. It doesn't matter. That's California. Then we have, that's California, right? So that's just California. And people say, well, yeah, that happens. That kind of stuff happens in California. What about South Dakota? South Dakota has a diversity orientation presentation for law students at the University of South Dakota, which basically, and I'll summarize this, says that if there are any blacks, Mexicans, Muslims, females in your class, and you're a white male, keep your mouth shut because you're worthless. You're taking up space, is what it says. So if you're white, you're just taking up space. You're not contributing to anything because you're automatically and genetically a racist. This is what's being taught using our tax dollars in our schools nationwide. Here's something that was expected. A Cornell University study. They use an artificial intelligence system, in other words, a program, to go online and to monitor chats, like in Facebook or Twitter or things like that, and to indicate which ones showed prejudice and hate speech. Well, now here's what happened. So they're monitoring everybody. And whenever they come across, now we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of texts and tweets and things like that. So one comes up that's using words that indicate racism, hate, threatening, and they're marking all of these. And when they went back and they checked all of them, well, they were from blacks. They were from blacks talking to other blacks. And this program indicated that the manner to which they spoke was hate speech and showed prejudice. They were blacks. Now here's the finding. Instead of saying, like normal people would say, well, that blacks talk like that, that's how they talk. Now that's a generality, but this is the group that they were monitoring. Instead of coming out and saying that so-called African American English is abusive, in its own self. They come out and said that, well, this program just became racist. That's all. This program can tell if somebody's black or white, apparently. Apparently. Not that the blacks speak naturally in abusive tones and manner. No, they're not going to come to that. Now, Chris Rock is a black comedian. He has a comedian. He has a comedy skit that he does, not a skit, it's a stand-up that he did, and he talks about certain types of black people. Now, I'm not going to play it for you, because every third word is what they say to each other and other people. So it's like, it's not very nice to listen to. It's funny as hell, but I'm not playing it over the air. Those of you who are in my chat room, armchairsurvivalist.com/chat.html. If you're in my chat room, and there's links to it, you go to armchairsurvivalist.com. I'm going to post the link there so you can go and listen to it at your leisure. And you go, yep, he's right. It's just funny. It's, you know, no big deal. Okay, so those of you who are in the military have probably gone to military.com. Right? It's an online magazine, and it purports to be for the military. And out of the blue, it starts promoting gun control. So people started doing some research on it and discovered this is not an American website in any way, shape, or form. The people that run the website are from the Netherlands. And they are anti-gun. They're socialists. The Netherlands is socialist. So if you go to military.com, realize it is not an American website. It's a socialist website. And it's promoting red flag laws. What are red flag laws? Red flag laws are if somebody, like, and it could be a family member, it could be a friend, it could be law enforcement. It could be a probation officer. It could be a judge. It could be a psychiatrist. It could be any number of people. Say, they call the police up and say, look, this guy has guns and he's a threat to himself or others. Then without any due process, they can come to your house, kick your door in, and take your guns. Oh, but that never happened in America, would it? Yeah, it's happened. It has already happened. And just so everybody knows, this isn't new at all. 30 years ago, we're in Modesto and we have two friends, man and woman, very, very nice people, photographers, professional. The woman died. She ended up with a fast-moving cancer, and in 7 days she died in her husband's arms. So we all went to the hospital. We did what we could. I took him home. I said, you got to go to bed. Now, they weren't married. They were just lived together. And her son, who was about 28, hated the guy. And the woman that died had some valuable camera equipment and jewelry and stuff like that. So this son decided he wanted all of this stuff. So he calls the police and says, Jake is a threat to himself or someone else, and he has a gun. It's 30 years ago. Police went to his... The guy hasn't slept in days. His wife had just died in his arms. He was sound asleep, and the police kicked his door in. Well, the first thing he does is pull his .45 that I sold him out from under his pillow. As soon as he saw it was the police, he dropped it, and the cops were smart enough not to have shot the guy. But they arrested him and took him off for his own protection. They instantly put him in a psychiatric institute, a so-called hidden one, in the city of Modesto. Nobody was supposed to know it existed. I do. I knew it existed. But regardless, they put him there. And he didn't... So it was like 2 hours later, I called the place, his place, and there was no answer. I went over there, and the door, you can see the door had been broken open. The door had been closed, but it had been broken open. So I went inside and got all his firearms that he had and anything that it looked like value, and I put it in his car downstairs and locked his car. And I found out where they'd put him. And to make a long story short, I got him out of there real fast. But see, this has been happening. There are stories of people who have been murdered by the police. Somebody calls up and says, this old man is grumpy and he's got a gun and I'm afraid he's going to do something. Cops just kick the door in. Guy comes in with his gun to protect his family, and the cops fill him with about 19 bullets. This has happened numerous times, and it has happened that I know of for 30, 40 years. But now they want to pass these red flag laws all over the United States. It's a Soviet manner of repealing the Second Amendment. Be aware of that. And they're going to cloud them and wrap these laws in the American flag for the children, don't you know? So a San Jose mayor, oh, I've dealt with this idiot before. San Jose mayor has come up with an idea to stop gun violence. So everybody in San Jose that owns a firearm is going to be mandated to get insurance for that firearm. You're going to get it? Yeah, you're going to be ordered to get insurance for your firearms. Why? Well, because the money that they make from the insurance on the firearms is going to help pay for any major shooting that occurs in San Jose. Can you guess what political party this idiot participates with and is a shining example of? Now, maybe you watched the news and you heard some of the whining liberals say, you know, the House has passed two bills that are sitting there and the Senate refuses to do anything on them. And if we had have passed these two bills, why, these mass shootings probably wouldn't have happened. Well, we all know that's a lie. So what are these two bills? One is H.R. 8. And I'll have a link to all of these. It's H.R. 8, and I love this term, Bipartisan Background Check Act of 2019. How is it bipartisan? Because two or three rhinos, Republican in name only, went for it. These are idiots. These are evil people. This kind of evil has been tracked back for thousands and thousands of years. Whenever an elitist government wants full control, the first thing they're going to do is dream up reasons to take your guns away, your knives away, your swords, your bows and arrows, whatever. So House Resolution 8. Okay, so basically it is... it's a background check. Okay, this is what they call it. What it does is ban all sales of firearms within the United States unless you're licensed. You get that? Only licensed dealers can buy or sell firearms. Period. Let's say you want to sell a firearm to Fred next door. then you have to go to a dealer. You have to give him the gun. And when you do that, you have to fill out a 4473 form that registers that firearm into your possession. Okay? And then the buyer has to fill out another form. And I guarantee it'll be different than the normal 4473, the yellow form. So the seller has to go to a dealer and fill out a form. The buyer has to go to that dealer and fill out a form and pay X amount of dollars to receive this firearm. So now there's a track of where that gun came from and who that gun went to. So this is what the Democrats are proposing in H.R. 8. Well, that's just one of these bills. Then you have the next one, which is H.R. 1296. This is the assault weapon ban of 2019. And I like the way they did this. Well, it's all Democrats have gone for it, of course. Basically, the first part of the bill is saying these are the kind of firearms you cannot buy. You cannot own. Not own. You can't buy, you can't sell, you can't own. They say they give you a kind of. And then they start listing them. They list all the guns you may not own, you may not buy, you may not sell. See, that's the thing. The thing is, they're creating a list of everything that they do and don't want you to own. And under Appendix A, is firearms exempted by the assault weapons ban of 2017. So they're going to use the same ones. So if you can determine that your firearm or your long gun or handgun or shotgun is good for hunting, then it's going to be legal. For now. So, and they're going to be permitting buyback programs. And these are all of these guns are called semi-automatic assault weapons and large capacity ammunition feeding devices, meaning any magazine that holds over 10 rounds is a large capacity. So you have 11 round magazines, 12 round mags. Those are illegal under this. And it's all Democrats, of course. Now, as I said, this is just the camel's nose under the tent. We know this. Anyone with any intelligence knows this. And to listen to the socialists tell you otherwise grants credence to their lies and makes you look stupid. See, in the UK, you're going to love this one. In the UK, they banned firearms for private ownership, except under certain characteristics, single-shot shotguns, target shooters, you know, just minor things. This is standard operating procedure for a totalitarian government. Then these idiots started to allow Muslims in. Now, what do Muslims do? They rape, they rob, and they stab people. Now, that sounds like a joke, but it isn't. Stabbings have become so stupendous and numerous in England that they're banning knives. I mean, I'm not kidding, this isn't a joke. They actually have little red bins on every street corner where you can turn your knife in. These little bins are now being stolen by gangs. It's kind of funny, you know, it's not like there's a gun crime, it was a knife crime. You know, the sad thing about all this liberal socialistic drivel that's permeating the whole world now, it's also affecting our pets. A singer by the name of Brian Lewis has a little song lamenting that exact situation.
Well, I think my dog's a Democrat. And it breaks my heart to have to say an ugly thing like that. But there's a big old pile of evidence that all points towards the fact my dog might be a Democrat. For all his health care, and I buy everything he eats. I provide him with a place to live just to keep him off the streets. But he just acts like he's entitled, even trying to unionize the cat. Yeah, I think my dog's a Democrat. Constitution that I keep on display, and every time Benghazi's on TV, he looks the other way.
What difference at this point does it make?
I know he's a liberal, even if he won't admit it. He pooped on my living room rug and tried to tell me George Bush did it. He ain't got no papers. And what really gets my goat is if he could find a ride to town, well, I know they'd let him vote. Well, sure, we've had some good times, and he's been fun to have around. If he ever barks about my right to bear arms, I'm gonna have to have him put down. I pay for all his health care, and I buy everything he eats. I provide him with a place to live just to keep him off the streets. You'd have to be a socialist. Spread the wealth, government health, flea-bitten Democrat.
15 years ago, I wrote on the internet and in newspapers, the Observer newspapers, and all over the world. Basically, they'd pick it up, and I wrote under the byline of the Gunrunner. And I have articles that I wrote. They were a little caustic because I like to slap people in the face with the truth and reality. So I'm going to read you one. It's called The Destruction of America, or Are You an Idiot Too? Since well before 1900, the powers that be have had plans for the complete domination of this planet. Europe was easy. The people there had thousands of years of history as slaves and peons. Asia was just as easy. In fact, only America posed a problem. It seems we had this one little road bump to the domination of America called the Constitution of the United States of America. So this group, we call them the powers that be, hatched a long-term plan. It was based on a new philosophy being created in Germany by a man named William Wundt, W-U-N-D-T. The time was around 1875. Wundt was an instructor at the Leipzig University in Germany. He had just redefined the study of psychology from study of the soul, and that's what psych is soul, and ology is study of, to how to control the reactions of man. Wundt believed that man had no soul, no independent thoughts, and was simply a culmination of the external stimuli one has experienced during his lifetime. Wundt's early writing showed that his research was an attempt to absolve man and himself from responsibility for any actions, either good or bad. These were the exact concepts that the powers that be had been looking for. If Americans could be convinced that they were weak, had no soul, weren't responsible for evil acts, couldn't really be expected to achieve anything of value, were basically mental, emotional, and spiritual failures from birth, then they could easily be controlled. When Wundt's graduates came to America, starting about 1883, they were magically placed in prominent positions in all the universities and schools in the U.S. From these vantage points, they would then control education. And I'll have another show that explains the whole thing, and the show will be titled The Leipzig Connection. These men created the processes by which American children would become more stupid the longer they attended school. This is a known phenomenon. The plan was to destroy the concepts that made Americans different and more powerful than the rest of the world. Things like honor, work ethics, morals, knowledge of right from wrong, willingness to fight for what's right. These needed to be erased from the American consciousness. Teachers were trained to allow certain failures amongst their students, which eventually created the large dropout rate we see in America today. School is no longer where one went to learn how to read, write, and do math. It has become a social training ground wherein psychology would create a true working class of Americans, trusting only in the federal government. The eradication of personal ethics, honor, responsibility, morals, spiritual beliefs, and patriotic pride in an individual is a tough task all by itself. Executing a plan intended to strip these qualities from an entire nation required patience. This couldn't be done overnight. It had to be performed slowly so that the common man wouldn't get wind of the truth. You understand the concept of how do you cook a frog? You put it in a pot of water and turn the temperature real low and only bring it up a degree at the time, and the frog won't know the difference until he's cooked. It's taken almost 100 years of diligent work by several generations of socialists, psychologists, and politicians to achieve that desired effect. And they have. They're done. We are now idiots, and we are kept that way by our willingness to be idiots. Our schools create idiots. Our media condemns those of us who say that high school graduate is an idiot and convinces us that being an idiot is now acceptable. Our government promotes, condones, and even funds the destruction of personal responsibility, ethics, and morals. If we, when seeing that a chosen lifestyle is killing over 10 million people yearly, and we condemn that, then we're instantly accused of being intolerant, abusive, and homophobic by those that practice that perversion. We see an idiot take a pistol into a bar, kill three people, then blame the gun, and the idiots amongst us believe him. A girl gets shot through an apartment wall by a drunk moron playing with a loaded gun, and she sues the gun maker, which is exactly as the powers that be wanted. By using this perversion called psychology, they've led us to believe the following. We are too stupid to control ourselves. We're too unethical to conduct a business without government guidance and control. We're too abusive and ignorant to raise our children. Nothing is ever right or wrong. Morals are an individual thing not to be evaluated by others. We cannot, dare not, judge anyone for fear of hurting their feelings. We own nothing. We rent it from the government via taxes. We work for the benefit of others, not ourselves, and if you disagree, you are evil and selfish. All men are equal. So the high school dropout gutter trash who deals drugs at age 14 is the equal of a successful businessman at age 15. Failure is inevitable, so don't try. It's really not your fault. The physical universe is more responsible than you are. In other words, blame the car, the gun, the cigarette for your actions. Success is an accident preceded by your stealing from someone else. Just because the 14-year-old girl is having her third abortion, that's her right, and who the hell are you to judge her anyway? Anyone can have sex with anyone or anything they want. That's enough. You get the idea. It's too late. American society is now under total control by the powers that be, and there isn't anything we can do about it. Or is there? You can fight City Hall. When you see an idiot being an idiot, tell him. By keeping your mouth shut, you're condoning idiotic actions and ideas and helping the enemy win. When someone does something that flies in the face of reality, sanity, ethics, and morals, tell them. Grandpa used to say, don't think you're on the right track just because it's a well-worn path. Many idiots have walked this path. Many more will walk it. Most will condemn you for stepping off this path, and the agents of the powers that be will attempt to dissuade you. But to walk this path is to agree with their goals, the complete destruction of self-determinism in man and the total control of us all. Choose to step aside and make a new path. We did it once before, only now we need to rediscover the path our founding fathers made for us to follow. Failure is not an option, because it will result in real Americans being overrun by idiots. Government threat. This is a new category for this year. I've been finding too many things. You can't put them under liberal psychosis. You can't put them under president. You can't put them under anything except threat being promoted and produced by our government. And when I say government, I mean city, county, state, federal. See, the president is supposed to be just a figurehead. That's what a president is supposed to be. They're supposed to sit up there and say stupid things and agree with their party and get stupid things done. Well, that's Trump threw a wrench into the gears with that one, because that's not what he's been doing. So these things under government threat literally have very little to do with a president, except by coincidence. Now, I could be telling you all about the different hacks that have occurred, how over 1 billion passwords have been stolen from Google. We're talking the past month. How millions of passwords have been taken off of Facebook, how credit cards are being hacked, how databases are being discovered in the parking lots of Denny's on a laptop that somebody dropped. I mean, on and on and on, but that's neither here nor there. What I'm talking about now is the stuff that's directly affecting people. Now, on Facebook, they have the ability that you can, it's called a messenger, right? So you can communicate to people. And if you're Japanese and want to communicate to me, well, it'll transcribe it into audio. And what's happening is that Facebook has contractors that are translating all of these audio chats. Now, as we know, Facebook lies. Everything they say is a lie. I haven't found anything truthful yet coming from an agent of Facebook. They say, oh, no, that's just to make sure that the translating is working well. Well, no, it's they're transcribing everything that comes across, and they're saving them. If it's not in English, they'll transcribe it to English, and then it gets saved. Who knows where it goes? Probably the giant facility in northern Utah for the NSA. Now, you understand what facial recognition is. Facial recognition is a electronic surveillance system that, if it has your data on file, it can pick you out of a crowd. Well, they're testing some new facial recognition software in California. Unfortunately, it mistook 20% of the California lawmakers, you know, House, Senate, for criminals. So it's not even working. It's just flat not working. And I think that's funny. Facial recognition. It's, you see it on the movies, you see it on Mission Impossible, you see it on Jason Bourne movies, you see facial recognition all over the place. There are ways to mess with that. There's LED lights you can buy and put on the bill of your hat that cause reflection in the lasers or in the cameras that are filming you. And then I just saw this cool thing where if you really want to screw up the facial recognition cameras, you buy clothing that has hundreds of license plates embedded on them, painted on them. So you look like a bunch of cars. So that the cameras get confused and don't know what to look at. They look at the license plates as opposed to your face. Be that as it may, the so-called facial recognition system in California is accidentally confusing politicians with criminals. maybe it's not so accidental. I don't know. San Diego. A big thing is happening down there, and most people don't even know about it. You see city workers coming in and fixing the streetlights. They're replacing the streetlights. Upgrading, they say, the streetlights. And they are. Most of the time, they're taking out the halogen and putting in LED lights. They're also putting in cameras at the same time and also putting in microphones. So just in the past couple months, law enforcement in San Diego have used these surveillance systems, these street lights or street poles. You know, in downtown San Diego, they have these street lights. They're like old gas poles on the sidewalk. They've arrested 140 people because of this. They just listen to people talking. And this guy, yeah, I'll meet you at the corner of 4th and Asphalt. And cops show up there and nobody knows why. This is happening all throughout the United States. Now, it's all been happening in Europe and China already. And those powers that be that I've talked about and other people have talked about, those are real. And they're trying to make everything exactly the same worldwide. And they have allies within the United States. These allies you would call Democrats, socialists, communists, useful idiots, and some Republicans, unfortunately. Those are the worst because you, on the surface, they seem like allies and friends. So you just be aware of this. This is a phenomenon that's happening all over the United States. And it's going to get worse. And I mean big time worse. And I'll tell you about that in a second. You know what OnStar is? We bought a couple vehicles over the years that have OnStar. OnStar is a communication system that's embedded in your vehicle, and you actually pay for it. It's you pay a monthly fee for it. And what it does, you can communicate to them. You can say, hey, OnStar, where's the closest Denny's to me where I am? Or can you dial 911? Or, you know, any number of things you can use them for. It depends on how much money you pay monthly. That's one of those funny things. It's where a government agent walks up to you and says, hi, I'm with the government. I'm here to slit your throat. Let me have your knife. You're giving them the ammunition to use against you because the police and the FBI have used OnStar thousands of times to listen in on conversations without warrants. And then when they were caught doing so, they discovered that, oh, it's easy to get a warrant anyway. So now it's with warrants, and it turns your car off. So if you're driving along, and a law enforcement officer says, reads your plate, license plate reading programs, and you just drive by, the cop's computer beeps, his laptop that he has on his center console beeps and says, okay, this is a stolen vehicle, or this guy is wanted for failing to appear, or violation of probation or what have you. And if he knows that there's OnStar in that car, he can call OnStar and say, turn the car off. And boom, turns it off. I have a this is funny, but it's only funny now. And it wasn't funny then. I had a friend of mine that was at a baseball game, and his wife called and said that the dog got hit and he's got to get home. So he borrowed his friend's truck that his friend gave him a ride to the baseball game in his truck. So he borrowed his friend's truck to go home real quick. And his friend's wife didn't know that he had loaned it to anyone. So his friend's wife came out of the game, couldn't find the truck, called the police and turned it in as stolen. And was asked, do you have OnStar? And she said, yes. What's your license number and your name? And she gave it to him. They turned the truck off on the freeway. Killed the engine. He coasted to the curb, to the side. And they knew where he was because there was GPS on with all OnStar vehicles. Well, that's not real a lot of fun. So any OnStar that I get, I disassemble it. I take it apart. I don't want any possibility of it ever activating. And there's other pieces of equipment on vehicles besides OnStar. There's other ones that do the same exact thing. So any of these communication systems that are installed on any of these new cars where you can call somebody. And but that's another thing. So you get these cars that are phone ready, right? Hands-free. So you can sync it with your cell phone and you can make phone calls. You just push a button and talk into the sun visor or wherever the microphone is and say, hey, I'd like to make a phone call. Well, they always give you the option of uploading your phone book from your cell phone into the car's memory. That way you can simply say, dial Fred, and boom, your car will call whoever. Unfortunately, when you do that, now there's a memory of your complete phone book. So if you're ever pulled over, the cop can, and this is a new thing. Police, when they pull somebody over, have the ability, and this is a remote system, from their car to access your car's phone system and see what data you have on it. When did you make the last call? Did you text? Because some cars have an actual a screen would actually pop up to where you could text. So police will be able to access that data to see if you've been texting, to see when you made your last phone call, to see if you answered a phone by picking your phone up or by pushing the button, you know, and talking hands-free, you know, all of this data. And they download it. In fact, if you're within 100 miles of the border, any border in the United States, the federal government has given itself the right to eradicate all constitutional rights from you. So you no longer have the right to tell them, no, you cannot read my phone. Well, because they read your car. If you tell them, no, you can't look at my phone, they'll just read your car and download the data from that. And there's a lot. It's really getting disgusting. It's always been insulting. Now it's getting disgusting. And there was a research done. This is neither good nor bad. This is just stating the facts. Because as we know now, the communists in the United States, and you know, you see me interpose Democrat, communist, socialist. They're the same creature. But you see the communists in the United States right now screaming and yelling that we need more gun control. Need more gun control because of all the mass shootings. So the Rutherford Institute did some research on how many people are actually being killed in the United States by firearms. And it, from the FBI crime statistics, it got broken down to be very, very specific. Civilian shooting intruders, people defending themselves with firearms, people robbing stores and shooting somebody, burglaries, murders, all of this stuff. Well, since 2015, the largest group that has killed people in the United States are police. The police kill an average of 3 people a day. Now, it doesn't say whether or not they were attacking a cop, if they were in the commission of a crime. See, you have to understand how law enforcement works. If a cop walks up to you in the street and says, turn around and get on your knees, and you go, what? Well, that's assaulting a police officer right there. And that'll give the cop the justification to put a bullet in you. So you've got to be real careful. Now, there's a lot of cops out there that are listening to this and going to say, I'm full of crap. Sorry, I'm not. It's been proven. It has nothing to do with black, white, green, or blue. It has to do with the fact that 3 people are dying a day because of being shot. And there is a lot of gun violence, if you want to use that term, inflicted on unarmed individuals. Let's see. So it's about 1,200% more people killed by police than mass shooters since 2015. There are anecdotal stories. There's stories. There's thousands of them of people who have been shot by a police officer. And it's hard to say that, oh, it's because he wasn't trained well or because he was trigger happy or because he was racist or because he was on drugs or because, I mean, there's all kinds of different justifications that somebody will have for shooting somebody else. It's getting to the point where this government is arming so many people that aren't qualified. And by qualified, I don't mean they've had military training or weapons training. I'm talking mentally qualified. This government is setting up so many unqualified employees with firearms that it's insane. IRS agents, I mean, they have IRS agents have select fire AR-15 rifles, and they also have armored personnel carriers. It's getting ridiculous. Every agency you can think of, including Social Security, the post office, are being issued firearms. And this is the sign of a government that's afraid of its people. You know, I don't know where it's going to end, but I can tell you this. There's also something else the federal government is creating. And I heard Trump talk about this. And as soon as I heard him talk about it, I knew something was wrong. Because Obama had talked about it, and Bush had talked about it, and Clinton had talked about it. These are called opportunity zones. These opportunity zones are where the government comes into a rundown area of a city and says, we're going to help the people. We're going to create this area here as a smart area. We're going to get all new LED lighting in the area and free Wi-Fi to everyone who lives in this area. See, that's an opportunity zone. And what they don't tell you they're doing is, remember those street lamps I told you about they're doing in San Diego? So those street lamps have cameras, they have microphones, they have facial recognition and license plate recognition software embedded in it. These are all going in these opportunity zones. And this free Wi-Fi is monitored 24/7, and everything you do on it is tracked and recorded. These zones are being placed all over the United States. When if your city comes up and says, we have been designated as an opportunity zone, it's an opportunity for the federal government to spy on everyone in that area. So anybody who walks in that area is going to be recorded. Anybody who drives in that area is going to be recorded. And this is ridiculous. Like, we have gun shows in Spokane. Now, they're real crappy, but that's 30 miles west of here. So what happens is they have the gun show after about 3 or 4 hours. An undercover cop car with license plate recognition program systems and cameras installed drives through the parking lot. Now, these cars have cameras, one in the front, one in the back, one on both sides. And they just drive through, recording all of the license plates of all the vehicles that are there. To do a couple things. One, if there's a stolen car there, well, they can respond to it. If there is a car there of a known criminal or somebody who has a warrant out for their arrest, well, they can respond to that as well. But the other thing they do is they record the plates and let's say, oh, look, this guy is from Idaho. He's not from Washington. Well, he's crossing state lines. I wonder if he bought a gun illegally or sold a gun illegally. So that person has a little red flag in his file. And that data goes to the ATF and the FBI. So at a later date, if that guy does something wrong and they go search his house and they find a handgun, they say, oh, so on the 22nd of November in 2017, you were at the gun show in Washington. Did you buy this there? So this is what's going to be happening. They're going to be recording. You go through the area. You pass through the area. They're going to know that you did that. And this is an opportunity zone. The opportunity isn't for you and me, I can tell you right now. Okay, so here's the commercial. I'm going to talk a little bit. Every one of the shows, my wife has ordered me to talk a little bit about one of our products, so I got to pick one out. So what I'm going to talk about are sublingual vitamins that we have, sublingual nutritionals, what they're called. Sublingual is a series of glands underneath your tongue. So for people who have a problem swallowing, instead of swallow, you absorb it. And you do that by placing it under your tongue, hence the term sublingual. So these are sublingual nutritionals, like if you're having a heart attack or something, they give you nitroglycerin and you put it under your tongue and it goes into your blood system now. So here we have these groups of products that are for that purpose. They're not only 100% bioavailable, they're also fast acting. Like we have one thing, you ever get a shot, one of those B vitamin shots in your butt or your arm that burn and sting? Well, picture just taking a couple little tiny pills, and I mean tiny. They're about the size of a pencil tip. Throw them under your tongue. Let them dissolve. Boom. You just got it's called a no shot. It's B6, B12 folic acid. And for those of you who need vitamin D, we have, there are 100 tablets. They are 10,000 units per tablet. Most of these are $15, by the way. Some are a little more, some are a little less. If you have trouble sleeping, We have a couple other products. See, we have many things that can help people get to sleep. We have CBD oil. We also have melatonin. Now, these are instant dissolving microtabs, 3 milligrams each, or what's called a slumber helper. And it has a mixture of passion flower, chamomile, valerian root, and wild yam. It goes under your tongue. Then if you need the complete B complex, we have those as well. And then this is a big one for a lot of people. We have a lot of seniors taking this. It's 100% daily vitamins. There's 100 of these instant dissolving microtabs for $10. It goes under your tongue. These are generally for people who can't take pills or who have adverse reactions. So these are called sublingual nutritionals. And if you go to se1.us, go to the left-hand side, you'll see our links, home, site map, how to buy from us, about us, and then healthcare. You click on the healthcare, it takes you to kind of like a big scrolling catalog. It'll tell you most of the stuff that we carry. There's also water filters, food, oddball stuff, and on sale. And remember that on sale thing, you go there and you're going to find some stuff that we're just closing out. So you'd go to se1.us, that's Samuel Edwards, the numeral 1, se1.us, and that's our website. You can also go to survivalenterprises.com, but either way, you'll end up in the same place. And you can look at the products that we have, the oddball stuff that we have. You can call us pretty much any time, 7 days a week. We don't have a life. We're here to help people. 800-753-1981, 800-753-1981. If we're available, we'll be more than happy to answer any of your questions. If not, just leave a message and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. We are more than happy if you come into the store in Hayden, Idaho. We will explain anything to you. We know everything about every product that we sell. That is one of the requirements for this business. We've been in business 35 years. And if I don't know what I'm selling, I'm not going to waste my time. So I research it. As you know, I do a fair amount of research. So the products we have, I research. And that's what we have for sale. So that's the end of the commercial. What I'm going to be doing now is a show that I do every single year, as close to as possible to the anniversary of when my mother died. She was born September 20th, 1931, and died in the arms of her children July 18th, 2013. And this show I've done every year since 2013, and I didn't start soon enough to get it done this year, but I am getting it done now. And I got to tell you, you'll hear about it. You'll hear the show. It's only about a little over 30 minutes, and I've edited it down for time. There's a lot of information on there, and you'll hear me say some of these things I'm going to tell you right now in there. We're not a normal family. Our lineage can be tracked back to the first time we actually had to fight the Muslims. One of my ancestors was a Knights Templar. As far back as we could tell, that was the beginning of it. And that was the Reynolds clan. Our family is, if you listen to me enough, you know, we're all the members of our family have been individualists. We like to stand on our own. We like to keep away from the government because the government in the United States is not our friend. Fortunately, it's the best government that exists on this planet. And as it sits right now, we have all kinds of freedoms and options that are not available in other countries. Like, you can own firearms here for now. You can travel without having to show your papers for now. You can vote for now. So there's all these things that we can do for now, but you can't do them in other countries because our founding fathers fought hundreds of years ago to enable us to have this republic. And our family is old. Some of our family came out of the Ohio area. Some of them came out of Oregon area. There's a book written on our family called El Dorado. It's about 3 inches thick, and probably a third of it is about our clan. We were part of our clan was known very well in Northern California, the Reynolds clan, and the Jenkinsons, or the Jenkins and the Jenkinsons. There's a park up there, Sly Park Lake. It's named after one of our clan members. So we have history. We have a lot of information, and you'll get some of it in this little 30-minute blurb that I'm going to play in a minute. My mother was very special. She raised us by herself since I was about 6 years old. And we did everything we could to help, because that's what families did at that time. Now I've got no clue what the hell they do, but it sure has nothing to do with true family values. But anyway, I'd like you to just relax, listen, and realize I did have to edit this. It was an hour long, and I took a bunch of it out, and there was a lot of poignant pauses in it where I could barely constrain myself, and I could barely talk. So I'll see you all next week. Keep your nose in the air and your ear to the ground. Pay attention.
In July, after the first show, which is on internet security, I know, what a laugh. A day or two later, something told me to call the engineer, Todd, and say, cancel the show for the rest of the month. Now, any of you listen to my show, you know I don't do that. Something said, you need to have the rest of the month open. So I told Todd to play The Way to Happiness, parts 1, 2, and 3. It's not as if we all can't learn from that. So he set it up. 2 days after that, I get a phone call from my brother in California. I know he's an idiot. He's still living there. And he says, mom's had a stroke and she's in the hospital. So we packed up lock, stock, and barrel, and my wife, Angie, my son, Eric, and I headed south. When we got to where we were going, I went into the hospital in the ICU, and my mother had had a massive brainstem stroke, which basically shut off the ability of the brain to control the body, period, nothing. Couldn't control anything. The only thing keeping her alive was the oxygen. They had her hooked up to machinery. She was 80 years old, 81, not sure which. She was there. Brain scan showed that she was there. Brain was working fine. It had no control whatsoever on the body, and the body was dying. The machinery could not keep it going. I want to talk about my mom, Wilma Wilson. My family is not just a family. We're not just some people. Our lineage is traced back to Philip de Renault. He was a Knight Templar. We're descendants of the original Reynolds clan, with Clan McInturf, Clan MacDonald, Kitching, Bruner, and the Cherokee Nation thrown in. Our family history goes back well over 1,000 years and is trackable. We've had presidents, highwaymen, thieves, generals, soldiers, healers, shamans, princes, princesses. We've had books written about members of our family, both good and bad. Some of our family is still hated in certain parts of the world, and some still have warrants out for their arrest in certain parts of the world. Some have statues standing about them in certain parts of the world. The thing about our family is that we always craved the adventure. Many of you know most of your friends are just an 8-to-5. You know, they just go through life, do their 8-to-5 thing, have a wife, 2.1 children, couple cars, and they're happy with that. We've never been that way. We've always craved the adventure. So is my mother. My mother's always craved an adventure. And when she's not in an adventure, she gets weak and tired and crabby. I told you that we showed up in Modesto, California, and we went and saw my mother, and she had had a massive stroke. It had burned her brain stem. She was still there, and there's some of you out there, many of you, who don't understand when I use the term she. I know you've heard me speak of the body, the mind, the spirit. Our family is not like normal families. We don't believe you have a soul like a little puppy. We believe you are a soul. So when I say she was still there, I mean she was still there in her head. And she was angry and upset because this was not part of the plan. She didn't plan on having her body die on her. So my brother and my sister and I, after talking with all the rest of the clan, we said our goodbyes to Mom. And she was upset that she would not be remembered. So there's no option. You cannot not remember my mother. So I promised her that I would take it upon myself to categorize, log, and scan and copy every photograph that we have available to us. And they go back to 1850, 40, something. I'm not sure. I haven't gone through the whole thing yet. But I've been astounded at some of the history that I've seen in these boxes of pictures and photographs that I brought home. So with my sister, my brother, and my wife, Angie, we held my mom and had them pull out the oxygen tube. It took her about 6 minutes for the body to die, and then she left at 7:51 p.m., July 18th. She was met by some people who loved her and would show her the way. But I want to talk a little bit about my mom. She wasn't just some old 80-year-old woman who just kicked the can. My brother apparently couldn't get away from her, so he spent most of his life living with her, or vice versa. She spent most of her life living with him and his wife and his daughter, Mary. And some years back, my brother became a representative for the NRA. Now, what he does is he works with the friends of the NRA putting on dinners and auctions all throughout California and Nevada. Like me, he's not good at what he does. He's the best in the world at what he does. When I was a gunsmith, I wasn't good. I was the best in the world at what I did, and he is the best at what he does. And Nana, Wilma, everyone called her Nana. Nana worked with him at all of the dinners and all of the auctions, and everyone got to know her. And she could take control of an area that was confused and step in, and you did not want to argue with her. My mom was not a normal woman. I recall when we were kids, we didn't have welfare. Once a month, the government would hand out excess cheese and peanut butter, and you know, our government used to care about the citizens. Well, that went away in the 60s and 70s, but we would drive to Oakland, California, is where they had the big warehouse there. So there's me, my sister, and my mom, and we would have to drive through some real seedy places in Oakland. And I remember one day driving real slow across these railroad tracks, and one day some guy comes running up to the side of the car and grabs the door with his left hand because your window's rolled down, and then he's trying to unlock it, open the door with the other. My mom calmly pulled a knife out of her boot and cut his finger off, just whacked it right off. And then she felt bad about it, so she threw the piece out at him. That was my mom. I came home from school one day. I think I was 6 years old, 8 years old, and here was my dad packing his car, and he said, "Nice knowing you." He gives me his service medals, and off he drives. So she had to raise three children on her own. Well, a year or so later, she hooks up with some other guy who abused her, and she didn't take that too well. And one day, he comes home drunk from a bar, opens the front door, and there she is standing with a loaded M1 carbine with a 30-round mag in it, pointing it at his face, telling him to get the hell out of here. And we had already put all his personal belongings on the front lawn. That was my mom. I'll tell you a little bit of history about my mom. You know what a sweater girl was? The pinup girls from the 40s and 50s used to wear these bras, like Lady Gaga, these bras that are like a cone that come out almost to a point. And then they would wear a beautiful cashmere sweater over that. That was a sweater girl. My mom did that in high school. I still don't have all the information. I am still finding out things. I didn't know. I'd only heard rumor that our clan came from a Knight Templar. I just found the proof this morning. So there's a lot of things that I don't know that I'm finding. She went to school at Humboldt High, and she was good friends with a guy there nicknamed Tiny, who started the Hells Angels of Humboldt County. She would go on rides with them now and then. And by the way, she stayed friends with him, unbeknownst to me, until the day he died and was buried at the Catholic cemetery behind our house in Sacramento, California. And that was in the middle 60s, I think it was, late 60s. At 18, Wilma married Jack and became Wilma Wilson. Now, Dad was in the Navy, and we were in Eureka at the time as a little kid. And then my sister was born, and we moved to base housing in San Diego. And an interesting thing happened to me in San Diego. This is like the 50s. And if you can imagine how everybody was dressed and what everybody did, nobody ever locked their doors, and everyone felt safe in base housing. And it wasn't base housing like you have. These were like single-level concrete buildings that would house four apartments or houses. One night, I was put to bed, and this is when I was shown my totem. Totem is your spirit animal that guides you. I was put to bed. They close the door. It's pitch black in my room. I hear something rustling in the corner. And I mean pitch black. I see nothing. I hear something rustling. And I'm seeing two golden eyes about 2.5 feet off the ground. And they start coming towards me in a walking manner. And I'm looking at this. Now I'm not asleep. I haven't gone to sleep. I'm looking at this like, what the heck is that? I feel cold. I'm so afraid. And then if you can imagine, those of you who have a dog or a cat, imagine it getting up onto your bed. You feel the weight of a body pressing down on the blankets and laying across my legs. At that point, I screamed. And all the men, there was 20 men, must have been out front, come running into my room. There was nothing there. But you could see where something had laid on the foot of my bed. And I told them what had happened. And most of them, like, just foo-fooed it, and like I was some wacko nut. Everyone left, and then Mom sat in there, and she goes, "What did you see?" I said, "I didn't see anything, but it had eyes like a tiger." She said, "You'll remember that." To this day, my totem is still the tiger. Now, we moved from there back to Eureka into a two-bedroom apartment, and we had like 8 people living in there. And I have some stories that I could tell you about my Uncle Irwin coming home from the Navy with sunburned and various parts of his body, and his new wife and him were in one of the rooms, and all I heard from him was, "Ow, ow, ow, ow," all night long. I never did understand that until years later. From there, We moved to a log cabin on a reservation, and that's when I was taught how to shoot a bow. But it wasn't a normal bow. It was a six-foot long bow, and it had come from our family and been brought over from England. I don't remember a lot about that. See, I'm telling you all of this stuff from what I remember. And it was always a contentious time with Mom and Dad, because Dad wanted to be the man, and so did Mom. And she did not like anyone telling her what to do. She just wanted to do what she wanted to do whenever she wanted to do it, not answer to anyone. And Dad didn't like that. After a few years, it got kind of problematic with them. Well, Dad got out of the Navy. And by the way, when Dad was in the Navy, he met this guy named Bing Crosby. Bing Crosby had been filming one of his Road 2 movies, like Road to Rio, Road to Water Valley. And my dad assisted him in some manner to the point where it endeared my father to Bing for the rest of his life. Well, Dad heard, he got out of the Navy and heard that there was work in San Francisco. They were building something called Candlestick Park. So, lock, stock, and barrel off the reservation, we moved to a trailer in a trailer park right up the hill from Highway 101, which was a two-lane road. I remember walking across it to go to Candlestick Park to hang around with my dad while he worked building it. I was there when they built Candlestick Park. We lived there until almost everybody in the area got sick from some strange disease, which we didn't find out what it was till 30 years later when we found out it was our government testing the spread of pathogen and seeing how many people they can sicken in a metropolitan area. It was something they ended up calling the Hong Kong flu, claiming that it came from some illegal Hong Kong people, you know, somebody from Hong Kong. It wasn't. Well, after the stick got built, Mom said, look, we can make money doing foster care. So we moved into this three-story house in Sharps Park, and my mom started doing foster care. We'd have a dozen kids at one time. I remember that. And I remember a steel barrel that I would get into and go to the top of the hill in our backyard and roll down. And I remember that as a long roll. And you know something? I found a picture of that. I don't think my backyard was more than 20 feet long or wide. I just found that picture this morning. Good God, I was short. But that's what we did up there. And then all of a sudden we didn't. And then all of a sudden we were poor, had nothing. We didn't have beds. We slept on sleeping bags on the floor. And we moved to San Mateo. And I woke up one night with a rat asleep on my chest. And I was afraid to move, and at that moment, Dad came home. It was about 2 in the morning. He saw the rat, and he threw something. The rat took off and ran underneath the sink. He grabbed his 1911 45, caught the rat in a bucket, took it outside, dumped it in a garbage can, and squeezed off 8 rounds into a garbage can at 2 in the morning. Police showed up a few minutes later, and Dad goes, I shot a damn rat. And I go, oh, okay, and left. Try that today. Bad thing was, about 2 days later, my sister and I came down with the bubonic plague. See, that's what a disease was a disease, not a political statement. They cordoned off the city block, wouldn't let anybody come and go, and my mother had to walk my sister and I down to the corner twice a day so we can get antibiotic shots. Well, obviously we lived. And then Dad got a job at United Airlines. So him and a couple dozen guys that had been his shipmates aboard ship when he was in the Korean War bought some property at the south end of Lawrence Station Expressway in an area now known as Sunnyvale. Before then, it was nothing more than a tomato farm. And for the exorbitant fee of $4,500, he bought the property and the materials to build a three-bedroom, one-bath house with an attached one-car garage, which we lived in for about a dozen years. During that time, remember I told you about Bing Crosby, and I've talked to you about things that have how I met John Wayne at one of Bing Crosby's parties and how Bing's daughter taught me how to ride. Well, I found out it wasn't Bing Crosby's daughter that taught me how to ride. It seems Bing's first wife died on a Christmas. We were there at a Christmas party, and this really nice lady, I thought it was his daughter. I mean, you know, I'm a kid. She takes me out and teaches me how to ride the thoroughbreds. Her name was Olive Catherine Grandstaff. She was 30 years younger than Bing was. She ended up marrying him, and she was known as Catherine Crosby. Yeah, I had that cleared up by looking through this box of stuff. Anyway, so we lived there for a while, and then one day I come home from school, and there's my dad packing up his Volvo station wagon with a bunch of stuff, and he said, nice knowing you. I mean, literally, that's what he said, and gave me his war medals, and he drove off. Oh, they'd had fights. I remember one time Mom threw an iron at his head, and he ducked at the last minute, and it embedded itself in the wall of the house. These weren't nice fights. It was more like Mom was fighting, and Dad was totally befuddled of what the hell was going on. Mom literally was too strong to have a man. She was raised that way. She had to stand on her own and defend and protect that which she loved her whole life by herself. So after Dad left, she got three jobs, just so she could pay the house and feed three kids and two dogs, a parakeet, and a couple goldfish. So she had to have three jobs. And what she did was, first job was like 6 in the morning. I think it was 6 to 9, and she did janitorial someplace. And then she went to work for Lenkirk Electric, which was a part of the military industrial complex in the Bay Area. They built circuit boards for missiles, and this is in the early 60s. Now, my mom smoked. In fact, my mom smoked since I was in her belly when she was pregnant with me. You're going to love this. When I was a kid, mom would give me 50 cents to walk down the street to the supermarket, buy a loaf of bread, quart of milk, and a pack of cigarettes. And I'd walk in there, and they'd go, oh, you're Wilma's kid. Yep, this is what she wants. And they'd give me a pack of cigarettes, carton of milk, loaf of bread, and I'd walk home with it. That was then. This is now. You couldn't smoke at Lenkirk's because they had to have a clean room. I mean, they didn't care about the smoke. They just didn't want you dropping ash into the circuitry. I have this Aunt Thelma, or I did. She was very famous. She rode in the stagecoach, very last stagecoach that was ever robbed. Okay, this is Aunt Thelma. She could drink me under the table. Anyway, Aunt Thelma taught my mom the secret to never dropping ash from a cigarette. Here's the secret. Try it sometime. Mom would take a very thin wire and put it down the center of the cigarette into the filter. That's it. Your ash will never fall. Try it sometime. So mom would have this cigarette dangling from her lips, and you swear to God, any second that ash is going to fall, and you're just like, you're holding an ashtray, just reaching over like, any second, and it was the strangest thing to watch her. But they said, well, if it works, it works. So she started making money selling wire to all the other girls on the assembly line. She spent an hour every night clipping wire to link the cigarettes. Then at night, she worked as a waitress at the bowling alley. I won't say my mom was a fox, but she had a good figure. She wasn't like, oh, always had dates and stuff, because she didn't take crap from anyone, so obviously the men didn't want any part of her. Well, it ended up being so much work for her that she had to hire a nanny. She hired a Scottish nanny. And I didn't know this till years later, that she was part of our clan. But she hired this woman, and not only did this woman take care of us kids, but she also was a piano instructor. Now, my grandpa was a sheriff of Placerville for a few years, and the whorehouse on the end of town, they're supposed to pay their taxes every year, and if they don't pay their taxes, they got to do something. And Grandpa wasn't the kind that would just throw them out in the cold, so to speak, so he would take trades. Not sex. One year, he traded for a piano. It had been made in 1897. It was an upright. That's what we had in our front room when I was a kid, this 1897 New Yorker upright piano. And that's what I learned how to play piano on. So this lady taught us, not only did she take care of us as a nanny would, but she also taught us how to play the piano, all three of us kids. My brother was the youngest. He came around last. After he was born, Dad didn't last another year, and he took off. It wasn't anything my brother did. My brother wasn't problematic. In fact, he was easy to take care of. All we did was tie him in his bed when my sister and I wanted to go somewhere. No, that's not a joke. I don't remember that. He swears we did it. We were so poor that my mom wasn't making $10 an hour. She was making 65 cents, 85 cents an hour, and she had to pay the loan off on the house. And she had to pay for our health, our doctors, our dentists. She had to buy a car. Grandpa loaned her $150 to buy a 1951 Ford four-door coupe, which then she had to have the lady next door help her put seat covers on the car. My mom had never done this. She'd never put seat covers on anything, but the seats were torn to hell. That's why she got this car so cheap. See, the car only had 20,000 miles on it. It purred like a kitten, but somebody had gotten in and torn up the seats. That's why she bought it. She got it so cheap. Had new tires on it. I mean, it was beautiful, except for the seats. So my mom figured out how to take off this, unbolt the seats, and there were bench seats, front and rear, how to unbolt them, how to take them out. She went to Sears. Sears was the go-to store, and they had seat covers. There were factory seat covers. They weren't this cheap crap you get for $19.95 at Walmart. I mean, you put them on with hog rings. My mom went and got that, and took her 2 days, and she had new seat covers on the car, and it was beautiful. And I remember my sister and I used to play in the trunk of that car. And I think I told you the story of what my mom had shoved way up in the back of that trunk. It was a duffel bag, guns and ammo and food and clothes, and that was her bug-out bag. My mom was a little different. That's why I'm different. And if I wanted anything, my mom didn't have the money to give me a quarter, even a quarter. She had no money for that. She barely had all her funds allocated to us surviving. The one thing she would do is every Friday night, she would buy a pizza that you cook at home, a pint of cottage cheese. I have no clue how the hell she figured out those two together. And they used to have a pack of comic books for 50 cents. She would go those three things, and that would be our Friday night. I think the whole expense was like $2 for everything. I decided to help out. once in a while, some friends of my mom's, we would go to the beach, Santa Cruz. And I started collecting seashells, little tiny ones, not these big, no, not big scallops or anything like that. I mean, little tiny, tiny ones, size of an eraser. I had thousands of them. So I'd take them home, and my uncle flattened the tip of a little tiny nail, a finishing nail, and I'd use that as a drill, and I would drill holes in these seashells. And my grandmother had thousands and thousands of the hoop earrings, that you know, the pierced ear things. She would give me them, and I would make earrings. And I went door to door selling pairs of earrings for 25 cents. That helped. I mean, if I wanted, once a year, Mom would take us to Sears and use Grandpa's credit card and buy our school clothes. That's where, when Levi's were made in America, and the 501s cost $5 a piece. And that's, I'd get three pair of those every year. And then the next year, my brother would get those, and I'd get new ones. And then after a while, my sister, we were taught how to sew, by the way, by my mother. We couldn't afford a lot of clothes. So my mother taught me how to sew on a treadle sewing machine, taught my sister how to sew. And once a year, she'd take all of the old Levi's, take the hems out, and make a dress for my sister. So we would repurpose clothing. We didn't throw anything away. I mean, literally, when the garbage man come to pick the garbage up every, what was it, Wednesday or Saturday morning, it would be like two bags in a small garbage can out on a curb. And he's like, what do you do with all your garbage? My mom would tell him, we don't have garbage. All the food leftovers. First off, we don't have food leftovers. I mean, period. We didn't have food leftovers. There was almost nothing to throw out. Everything we used, we either recycled or we didn't have garbage. You could tell a real poor person by how much garbage they throw out. So after a while, Mom got tired of it. My aunt lived in Sacramento and said, Wilma, why don't you move up here? We get a house for you, only cost you $100 a month. We can get you a job and all of this good stuff. So my mom sold the house for $12,500. And I could tell you something. That house was at 1221 Oak Creek Way. The last time it sold was $500,000. Can you believe that? From 4,500 to 12,500, and I've gone back four or five times to that house, and each time it's, you know, the owner said, yeah, I sold it for $120,000, or I bought it for $250,000. It sold for over $500,000. So I moved to Sacramento. I forgot where Mom got a job at, but she got a job, and it was better than what we had before. See, it used to be in our front room, we had a couch and an old Hoffman television that cost my mom $10. I mean, that was it. Well, I remember when we moved here or to Sacramento, we ended up getting an easy chair. Oh, my Lord. We're uptown now. And we got an actual chrome-plated vinyl dinette set. You've seen them. They're all from the 50s and 60s and 70s. And we each had our own bed. Holy cow. Can you believe that? My brother had his bed. I had my bed. My sister had her bed. Didn't have a garage. We had a carport. But that was Sacramento. And we did pretty good there. There's a lot of stories that I could tell. But my mom, Wilma Mary Wilson, was not a normal woman. She was raised by a mountain man and survivors of the Depression. She was taught that, no, I'm sorry, honey, there is no option. You can't stumble and fall. You have to stand on your own two feet, and you have to be confident about it. And that's gone nowadays. It's gone. Nowadays, people put their hand out. Now, granted, my mom put her hand out, too. There were times when her life went really bad physically, and she had to go on disability and food stamps. And if my brother hadn't been there, my brother stayed with her to make sure that everything went as well as possible. Now, don't get me wrong. We still had fun. Hell, we counted ourselves lucky. We really did. But she learned that you can't suck the government's tit and expect to have any kind of soul left. So she went back to school. She went back to college, and in 1984, at the age of 52, she graduated with a four-year degree in early childhood development, and she started the Head Start in California. Now, after a few years, she got fed up with it and realized it was pure crap in politics. I mean, the kids would come there from illegal immigrants, and they would bathe them and cut their hair and take the lice off of them and feed them during the week. On the weekend, they'd go home. Then they'd come back the next week, and they'd be just as bad. And it was a government game, so she got tired of it. But here she is. She raised three kids, and she goes back to college. Now, I was gone most of the time. She raised me very strict. My brother, not so strict. In fact, when I come home from one deployment overseas, I'm sitting at the dinner table, and we're talking, and Mom says something, and my brother mouthed off to her. I backhanded him so hard that if there wasn't a wall behind him, he would have flown 10 feet. Instead, I just knocked him ass over tea kettle. And I told him, don't you ever talk to our mother like that again. I do not allow it. I don't talk with disrespect to my elders ever. That's gone. Mom had a wake. She said she didn't want to waste time getting buried. She wanted to be cremated. So we had a wake. We only had 2 days. Sent the email out. It was on Sunday. I don't remember. Bob's Home of Beef or something like that. That's my mom's favorite place. Whenever you showed up there on your birthday, they give you a hat. a cowboy hat. And she told my brother last year, you make damn sure they have a pink hat for me this year. I'm tired of those blue ones. They had a pink hat this year. So we showed up there, and I had like 7 bottles of wine. My brother, who doesn't drink, had 6. We had a good time. I want to read you something that was read at my grandfather's funeral and read at his funeral, his father's funeral, and his grandfather's funeral, and every funeral in a clan as far back as we know. I'm going to try and read it to you, okay? Now, first off, if I get cut off, Mom had 2 songs she wanted played at the wake. Those 2 songs are my outgoing music. This is my mother's choice, all right? Here is an old, old Celtic prayer. Do not stand at my grave and weep. I'm not there. I do not sleep. I'm 1,000 winds that blow. I am the diamond glints on the snow. I'm the sunlight that ripened grain. I am the gentle autumn's rain. When you awaken in the morning's hush, I am the swift, uplifting rush of quiet birds in circled flight. I'm the soft star that shines at night. Do not stand at my grave and cry. I am not there. I did not die. That's been traced back 1,200 years that we know of. And here's another prayer, if I can get to it. Wilma Mary Wilson, we remember you. At the rising of the sun and at its going down, we remember you. At the blowing of the wind and the chill of winter, we remember you. At the opening of the buds and in the rebirth of spring, we remember you. At the blueness of the skies and in the warmth of summer, we remember you. At the beginning of the year and when it ends, we remember you. When we are weary and in need of strength, we remember you. When we are lost and sick at heart, we remember you. When we have joy we crave to share, we remember you. When we have decisions that are difficult to make, we remember you. When we have achievements that are based on yours, we remember you. As long as we live, you too will live, for you are now a part of us as we remember you. Goodbye, Mom. I'll see you next time.
I get where I'm going, on the far side of the sky. The first thing that I'm gonna do is spread my wings and fly. I'm gonna land beside a lion, run my fingers through his mane. Or I might find out what it's like to ride a drop of rain. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. I will share the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. And I'll leave my heart wide open. I will love and have no fear. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, don't cry for me down here. I'm gonna walk with my granddaddy, and he'll match me step for step. And I'll tell him how I've missed him every minute since he left. And then I'll hug his neck. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, there'll be only happy tears. I will share the sins and struggles I have carried all these years. And I'll leave my heart wide open. I will love and have no fear. Yeah, when I get where I'm going, don't cry for me down here. So much pain, so much darkness in this world we stumble through. All these questions I can't answer, so much work to do. But when I get where I'm going, and I see my Maker's face, I'll stand forever in the light of His amazing grace.
Come on in. Rock a while.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. She'd been drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go. But she forgot her medication, and she staggered through the door out in the snow. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had hoof prints on her forehead and incriminating claws marks on her back. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now we're all so proud of Grandpa, he's been taking this so well. See him in there watching football, drinking beer and playing cards with Cousin Mel. It's not Christmas without Grandma. All the family dressed in black, and we just can't help but wonder, should we open up her gifts or send them back? Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now the goose is on the table, and the pudding made of fig, and the blue and silver candles that would just have matched the hair in Grandma's wig. I warned all my friends and neighbors, better watch out for yourselves. They should never give a license to a man who drives a sleigh and plays with elves. Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
Sing it with us, Grandpa.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we